This program was created with a print or visually impaired audience in mind. For the next half hour, I'll present the latest legal matters. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. The broadcast is available as a podcast at ncreadingservice.org. Welcome. This is Casey Mason with Disability Rights North Carolina. DRNC is a nonprofit organization recognized as North Carolina's protection and advocacy system, tasked with protecting and advancing the legal rights of nearly 3 million people in our state with a disability. I'm covering for Cash Shearing today. The next half hour, I'll present the latest legal matters. Today's topic will focus on legislative advocacy with tips on how to engage your elected officials. With us, Tara Mueller and Corey Dunn. If you would, let's start with you introducing yourselves.
Thanks, Casey. I'm Corey Dunn, and I serve as the Director of Public Policy at Disability Rights North Carolina, and I've been with the agency for about 12 years.
Thanks, Casey. I'm Tara Mueller. I'm a policy attorney at Disability Rights North Carolina, and I've been here about 3 years.
Welcome to you both. Let's start out by telling us a little bit about the work of the policy team.
Sure. So you know that Disability Rights North Carolina has a really broad responsibility to people with disabilities. So we work across settings, across disability, and across the lifespan of people with disabilities. And our role within that is to advocate for the rights of people with disabilities to policymakers. So the legislature, the North Carolina General Assembly, and state agencies like the Department of Health and Human Services, the DMV, the Department of Public Instruction, and Tara is our lead at the North Carolina General Assembly.
Yes, and so at the General Assembly, our team consists of me and Corey Dunn, and then our contract lobbyist, Chris Parks, who is an attorney herself, but has been working with us for years to create relationships at the General Assembly and help us get some meetings with folks when we want to work through some issues. So part of the challenge that we have is trying to decide how we are going to split up our issues because we work in such a broad area. We often have to, you know, kind of decide which of us will be covering, for example, education versus criminal justice versus health issues. And then also we consider our relationships with certain legislators and which of us would be more appropriate to work on different tasks. And then we also have to tackle the question of keeping our own staff informed and also getting input as needed from our staff. So we have within our organization experts in different fields. And so if we see, for example, a bill at the General Assembly that affects education, we would check with our education attorneys and kind of get input from them and then use that information to educate lawmakers.
So we do a lot of work in coalitions and with other stakeholders in North Carolina's disability community. And like Tara said, we get a lot of input from other Disability Rights North Carolina employees. We learn from, for example, our investigations and monitoring team that goes out into facilities where people with disabilities are receiving services. And we learn about things that they encounter out in the world, and we use that information to inform our policy advocacy. And that includes both that state agency work and working at the North Carolina General Assembly. And since we're going to focus mostly on the legislative side today, Tara, can you talk a little bit about the legislative process and where we are in it?
Sure. So as we are recording today, we are in the middle of a long session, a very, very fast-paced long session, actually, unusually fast-paced long session. So our legislative sessions are broken down into bienniums, meaning that 1 year is a short session and 1 year is a long session. The long sessions occur in the odd number of years, like this year, 2023. So In theory, the short sessions are primarily related to tying up some budget issues or correction, you know, technical corrections from the long session. And then the long session is more substantive types of law generally, and that's kind of a very broad overview. But in North Carolina, we do not have session limits in terms of any specific number of months or weeks. This is really different than a lot of states. So we've seen, for example, the last long session went for longer than a calendar year, believe it or not. It was 14 months. So some states have only a matter of weeks, only a matter of months. You know, we don't have any deadlines, and so it's really hard to predict. But generally, what we're seeing, like, for example, this long session, we're expecting it to be January through possibly July or August. So that's kind of a sort of a rule of thumb. We also, during long sessions, address the budget process. So there is a House budget that's proposed, a Senate budget that's proposed, and then the two usually get together. And it usually starts with a governor's budget, which serves kind of as a recommendation and a guideline that other people use, that both the Senate and the House use as a guideline going forward. So we try to really stay on top of that budget process because a lot of the concerns and priorities that we have are wrapped up in the budget, especially on the health side, for example. Medicaid is important to people with disabilities, and that's a usually a very large part of the state budget. So we are always keeping a close eye on the budget and trying to influence the provisions in it. There's also a crossover deadline in the middle of a long session. That crossover deadline means that a bill that started in the House, for example, has to have gone through all of the committees and a final vote on the House floor before it crosses over into the Senate, and then it goes through that whole process all over again in the Senate. And then vice versa for bills that start in the Senate. They have to go through all the committees, go to a final vote, and then cross over by a certain day. If they don't make that crossover date, then they are essentially dead unless they can figure out a way to get it put into some other bill or something. So there's a lot of kind of moving parts.
And there are lots of those procedural opportunities for members to move things around. So it's not as straightforward as, you know, we might like for it to be some days. But so, for example, a bill that made it through the House and is now in the Senate could be completely amended to be about a completely different subject. And then sent back to the House for concurrence. So it gets a little messy, but that's part of why we need a consistent presence there. Is it's tough to keep up with the 600 plus bills that have been introduced this year. Actually, that's just in one chamber, so it's more like 1,200 bills this year. And I think sometimes people are really surprised at the breadth of issues we work on. So, for example, we might be working with members of the Judiciary Committee on matters related to accessibility of the courts or criminal justice or juvenile justice matters. People with disabilities are massively overrepresented in both the juvenile justice and criminal justice systems. Like Tara said, we work a lot in education and health and human services. And then, you know, we have issues that come up, like relating to the DMV's operation of issuing ID cards for people to be able to vote, even if they aren't drivers. So that's, you know, we have this wide range of issues that we cover, and it means that we interact with a lot of different committees and a lot of different members in a way that I think is unusual for organizations our size.
When it sounds like the versatility that you guys have to have and kind of jumping through all the hoops and understanding the processes, you know, it's always a little magical to hear you guys kind of talk about your roles and responsibilities. And so one of the things I would love to learn a little bit more about, what gets you excited directly is what some of the bills that you're actually excited to see or to be working on this session?
Sure. We are working with partners on legislation related to guardianship in North Carolina. In North Carolina, we have expansive guardianship powers that really there has not previously been a concerted effort to move people into a less restrictive option than guardianship. Guardianship can be an entire substitution of one person's judgment for another. That's a really big deal. And it used to be treated as sort of a gift or a service to the person with a disability, but that's not how it always feels. And so we've been working with stakeholders for over 7 years now, and are very pleased to see our first piece of legislation moving forward in the Senate. And it will enable clerks of court and parties in guardianship proceedings, because clerks of court act as judges in guardianship proceedings. It'll require them to consider whether a power of attorney or a healthcare power of attorney or advance directive or a supported decision-making agreement, for example, would be enough to help a person with their decision-making needs and avoid a full guardianship. So that's really exciting, and we are so pleased to see that the North Carolina Bar Association and AARP and many others have gotten involved in that work and are carrying it forward.
Yeah, that is exciting to see, and like Corey said, that's the result of years of stakeholder work well before I came on board Disability Rights North Carolina, so it's really exciting to see that all come together. And then another bill that I am particularly excited about this session is in the education space. So what we see is a lot of students with disabilities in North Carolina do not receive the supports they need to stay in the classroom and get services in the classroom. The instruction in the classroom is really important, and that's kind of the thread of a lot of our work, is making sure that people with disabilities, both students and children, but also adults, get to stay in their own community. And when it comes to students, what that means is that they get to stay in the classroom, or possibly in a separated classroom, but at least within the same school. What we see in North Carolina so often is that students with disabilities that present, for example, very severe behavioral challenges, get put into situations where they do not get to stay in the school. So they get assigned to what's called homebound placement or modified day placement. When the schools say, you know, we're just unable to meet these students' needs, and then they end up separated from the school environment. So that is not ideal, and it's also not really in compliance with federal law. So federal law requires there to be a continuum of services offered to these students. If the actual school placement is not available, then there should be other options available in the same environment. So one of the bills that we're working on now would provide a mechanism for specialty schools for students with severe behavioral challenges. And we see this a lot in students with autism, for example, or fetal alcohol syndrome disorder. They're often invisible disabilities that manifest in challenging behaviors. And when their needs are met, they can, find ways to get their education in the classroom. When their needs are met. So this bill we've been working on for quite some time in conjunction with our education team. We've had students who go to these specialty schools and have had really amazing success. When their needs are met, they're able to learn how to learn, and then they're able to transition back to their regular classroom. So we're excited to see that bill moving forward this session. And we've been working with a lot of other stakeholders and a lot of the bill sponsors to, and the school itself, which, you know, one of the schools that's currently operating already in North Carolina and has shown really amazing results. So we're excited about that.
And I think what's really important about that one, I want to repeat what Tara said, because it's that important. Kids go back to their original schools, and the teachers, the paraprofessionals, the families, and the students have new skills to help them thrive in that environment. So it's not about sending a kid away forever. It's about bringing in folks with really specialized skills and making it so that kids can thrive in their school that they're assigned to originally. And that's a big deal, because that changes people's lives, right? That builds relationships, and it means that kids are with their peers and their siblings even, and that's really exciting.
Well, I'm thankful to you both for taking the time and the focus on what really matters and making sure that people with disabilities are represented across their state. Earlier, you had mentioned that we've seen over 600 new bills in the House and over 650 additional in the Senate. That seems overwhelming to me. How do you keep up with all the bills, and how do you prioritize or decide whether to support a bill or to oppose it?
That's a good question. It is tough sometimes to keep up with all of it. So we rely on our partners in coalition to help us look out for things that are important to us. We communicate with Disability Rights North Carolina staff to identify issues that they want us to look out for. And we are grateful for keyword searches. We have good software that lets us look for a wide range of keywords and identify bills that are likely to impact the lives of people with disabilities.
And, you know, part of our work involves the ending of institutional bias, and I kind of touched on that a little bit earlier. But when you talk about keeping up with the bills, our biggest goal is to keep an eye on any bill that would perpetuate a cycle of segregation of people with disabilities. So, you know, what we're seeing in the disability rights movement is more and more efforts for both adults and children with disabilities to make sure that they get the supports they need to be able to stay in the community, get their services in the community, work in the community, you know, worship, go to school, get all their services that they need in the community.
And play.
The type of life that we all envision for ourselves, right? So that's what we always keep an eye on when we're looking through the bills. And what we call that is institutional bias, is what we see a lot of times is laws slanted, unfortunately, towards keeping people in institutions rather than giving them the freedom to choose to live in the community and play in the community if that's what they so choose. And so a lot of that is kind of keeping our eye out for anything that we see as dangerous and maybe going backwards. We look at that in the criminal context, keeping people incarcerated when they don't need to be, in the education context, keeping them out of the classroom, in the housing context, keeping them in ICFs or big facilities rather than in, you know, group homes or at their own home. So that's what we kind of keep an eye on when we're looking at bills.
Well, again, I want to say I appreciate both of you for having the time and the focus on those matters, just because there's so many people out there throughout the day that just doesn't have the time to kind of keep up with what's most important and really what is going to affect them, their family members, and their loved ones the most. So the fact that you both are really focusing and taking the time to bring these issues forward I just want to say thank you, and definitely is appreciated. And so as you're combing through all of the new bills and proposals and everything, you know, walk us through the process of what steps you take when you finally identify a bill and when you're deciding either to support it or oppose it. What's that process look like?
Sure. We first talk with our internal partners, including your team, the communications team at DRNC, and we talk with other stakeholders in the space who are affected by the legislation, and we identify who may be opposed and who may be in support, and figure out where we fall in that and identify what we think is possible before we actually start digging in and advocating on any particular bill. So Tara is great at really thinking through who we need to talk to and why and how at the General Assembly. So why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. So when we see a bill, you know, we usually either have a knee-jerk reaction that we're going to support it or that we're going to oppose it, but we do confirm that with our staff first before we go forward deciding to meet with anybody at the General Assembly. So once we make that decision, our first step is to meet with the bill's sponsor, because you know, sometimes it's, even if it's a bill that we oppose, there's just some easy education that can be done or some discussions that can be had that can make a bill from what we perceive to be damaging to, you know, possibly really helpful, just with some minor tweaks. So our first step is usually to identify the bill sponsor and to meet with that person or group, depending on the number of bill sponsors, and to see if it's something. Sometimes it's just a matter of them, you know, having some information from another source that may be outdated or that, you know, maybe could be corrected. So once we meet with the sponsors and we determine if it can be amended that way, we will, if that doesn't work, for example, and we're not able to reach a resolution that way, then we would reach out to some other stakeholders. There are various caucuses within the General Assembly. For example, there's an intellectual and developmental disability caucus, the IDD caucus, so we would meet with those folks if it's a bill affecting people with IDD, or we would meet with, you know, the education, the people who are the chairs of the education committee if it's an education bill, or the health committee if it's a health bill. So there are kind of, you know, quote unquote experts within the General Assembly that we have built relationships with and that we would meet with if we're not able to reach a consensus with the bill sponsors. And then it's a matter of working with our experts at Disability Rights North Carolina to find out, you know, if there are other proposed solutions that we can come up with, other states that do it well, whatever the goal is, that, you know, the problem that the bill sponsor is trying to solve. Sometimes it's a matter of thinking outside the box and maybe, you know, thinking of some ideas that haven't already been considered. And that's where our work in coalition comes in so importantly, because we touched on this a little briefly earlier, but we do work with such a wide range of other coalition groups, and a lot of them, you know, have insight into various segments of disability law that that we rely on, and a lot of those groups are national too, so they have the insight from what other of ideas of what goes what works well in other states. And then, it's, you know, once we decide what can be done to improve upon a bill, we would go about, you know, proposing an amendment, maybe even drafting an amendment to help the bill sponsor. We try to make life easy for the members who are so incredibly busy during session. And so anything we can do, if it helps them, we usually offer to draft an amendment for them. Or get a stakeholder to help us draft an amendment.
So that amendment process is really important, and it sometimes involves a cooperative effort with sponsors, and it sometimes is not what the sponsors want, but we need to do it that way anyway. what matters most is that we make sure the rights of people with disabilities are protected in state law.
So for the people that these matters affect the most, we're not just sitting idly by and waiting for you guys to do the work. There's ways for people out there to get involved and to, become part of the disability lobbying process. Do you have any tips for people to get involved in that process and things that we can do maybe through our daily routine or something that we can do out of the norm today that would help aid the work that you both do?
Absolutely. The first and foremost is vote. Register and vote. What legislators want and need from you is your vote. And then once you are registered and you are an active voter, I want to make sure people are following the news. You know, there are a lot of our issues that are prominent in the news, and we want to make sure that people understand how they might affect themselves or their fellow North Carolinians with disabilities. You can also subscribe to the Disability Rights North Carolina newsletter that our fantastic comms team puts out, and build a relationship with your senator and representative. Contact them early, contact them often. And Tara, what do you think is important for folks who are looking to start that relationship with their legislators? How do they make sure that they get some feedback?
That's a great question, because I think in my experience, the senators and the representatives that I work with are always really, really happy to hear from constituents, but they also field hundreds of calls a day. And so I think it's really important to plan ahead before you call someone. And the North Carolina General Assembly does have a website where you can look up, type in your address, and it will give you the name of your senator and your representative. In my experience, they are always happy to hear from constituents, but I do think it's important to identify yourself as a constituent at the introduction, and to have a brief summary already prepared so that you don't waste anybody's time. You get right to the point. What exactly are you looking for, and how can the legislator help you?
Well, and to add, if you're local to the Raleigh area, Disability Rights North Carolina is hosting an annual conference on May 2nd. Information for that can be found at disabilityrightsnc.org. And with that, we've run out of time. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Legal Matters as much as I have. I'm Casey Mason with Disability Rights North Carolina, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club. This program is intended to share information with a print or visually impaired audience in mind, and the broadcast is available as a podcast at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Until next time.